You guys are too uptight. Nobody is clapping at all. There was no other way I could possibly start this message than that this morning. Unless you've been hidden away, you're familiar with Pharrell Williams' song, Happy. In fact, our own Maddie Scarlatta rewrote the words, and they were sung a few weeks back by the junior choir. People just love that song. You see them walking down the street, and they'll start singing it out loud. Well, this morning I want to talk to you a little bit about happiness, and I usually start with the dictionary on these sorts of things, and according to Webster's Dictionary, the word happy is defined as enjoying well-being and contentment, being pleased or gratified. Well, we all want that, don't we? Without happiness, life would be sour and dreary and discouraging. But that's not to say that we want to be happy every moment of our lives. That might be just as intolerable. George Bernard Shaw once wrote, "A lifetime of happiness, no one alive could bear it. It would be hell on earth." But just the same, it's part of our human nature to seek happiness. Herbert Wells, the author of The Time Machine, wrote, "Every one of these hundreds of millions of human beings is in some form seeking happiness." So I thought that maybe a place to start with this sermon was to find out who are the happiest in the world. Maybe by looking at some sociological data, we can gain insight into happiness. Well, according to one survey I found on the internet, several prominent sociologists accumulated data about the relative happiness of certain nationalities. And when asked to rate their happiness level, the Irish turned out to be just about the happiest people in the Western world. Happy Ireland is followed by Britain and the Netherlands and Denmark, and way down at number 6 is the United States. Although the psychologists were reluctant to specify what contributed to happiness, affluence seems to contribute to overall life satisfaction. But money alone doesn't produce happiness, we can see. Although the Irish earn only about a third per capita income of the Americans, they manage to be a good deal happier than we are. And they're positively delirious when compared to the Germans, even though the Germans make almost 3 times as much money. Well, you know, I admit that it's hard to pin down what really makes people happy. I suppose we all have our own theories on happiness, and one person's happiness may be another person's sorrow. There is an old story from a number of years ago, and it was, I think, in the midst of the Cold War, and it was about an Englishman and a Frenchman and a Russian, who years ago were there discussing happiness together. "Well, happiness," said the Englishman, "is when you return home tired after work and you find your slippers warming by the fire." "Well, you English, you have no romance," said the Frenchman. "Happiness is having dinner with a beautiful woman at a fine restaurant." "You are both wrong," said the Russian. "True happiness is when you are at home in bed and at 4 a.m. you hear hammering on the door and there stands the secret police who say to you, 'Ivan Ivanovich, you are under arrest.' And you say, 'Sorry, Ivan Ivanovich lives next door.'" We recognize, though, that happiness is important to each and every one of us here. In today's society, many are trying to find a sense of true happiness that will be lasting and enduring. And so we need to look to the Bible to see if we can discover something there about happiness. Our gospel lesson that Barry read a short time ago from Matthew 5 refers to some interesting qualities for happiness. Now you, as you hear this verse, you often hear it read as blessed rather than happy. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Listen to it a little bit differently. Happy are the poor in spirit. Happy are those who mourn. Happy are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. You see, the word blessed, although meaning some other things, is often translated to mean happy. The two words are used interchangeably throughout the Bible. Now, looking at this text, we naturally ask the question, how could anyone in their right mind be happy while poor in spirit? How could one be happy in mourning? How could the meek person be considered happy? Oh, these things seem so absurd. If I want to be happy, I want to be around people I love and value. I want to spend time with them. That is something that makes me happy. I'm happy when I'm eating dessert and sharing quality time with my family and my friends. I'm happy going on vacation or being successful here at my work. Those are things that make me happy. And I suspect they're the same kinds of things for you. As one begins reading Jesus' Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes, one must think only a fool would be happy for these qualities listed. But you know, in some ways, only a fool will be happy. In the book of Corinthians, Paul writes that all the wisdom and the knowledge of the world won't help us find the ultimate and eternal happiness. In our search for true happiness, I believe the foolishness and the nonsense of the cross can give our lives more meaning and more purpose and true happiness. The whole thing doesn't make sense. To have a Messiah sacrifice his life for the entire world is sheer foolishness. At least that was the perspective of some of the educated members of the city of Corinth. You see, Corinth was a highly educated city, but the church at Corinth was experiencing some divisions, where factions developed regarding differences in theology and differences in philosophy. And these factions began to lead towards a sense of self-centeredness and self-possession. Such a trend moved people to believe that they had a corner on the truth, that they possessed the wisdom necessary to live happy and productive lives. Well, this is the type of wisdom the Apostle Paul was addressing in 1 Corinthians. And what Paul did was challenge the Corinthians to look elsewhere for wisdom. He said wisdom could not be self-possessed and would not be found within oneself. Wisdom would be found at the cross of Christ. It's there that they would discover the wisdom of God. For as we visualize the tremendous sacrifice of Jesus upon the cross, as we consider his willingness to empty himself for the lives of all, and as we realize God's power to resurrect the Christ, the way we look at things then, including the way we view happiness, becomes sharply altered. When we look to the cross, it is as though his wife has burned this lesson of selfless love into our lives, enabling us to experience a fuller life. Then we no longer live our lives focused on ourselves. And we can gain a glimpse of what true happiness is like. See, happiness from the perspective of the cross is quite different from the happiness found in our society. The happiness that many of us are familiar with and know is more of a psychological state of inward satisfaction. The aim of that kind of happiness is to feel good about ourselves. But we know that kind of happiness rises and sets much like the sun. It's rarely constant. True happiness from the perspective of the cross is more a state of being not affected by the ebb and the flow of life. Such happiness is something that is deep inside and abiding. It can neither be given nor taken away by the world. For such happiness is discovered through opening up ourselves to receive God, through meekness, through our hunger and our thirst for righteousness, through our being merciful and pure in heart, through being peacemakers, and being willing to open ourselves to suffer insults and persecutions because of our faith. In short, happiness from this perspective is found when we open ourselves up to God and to others. These are the ingredients for true happiness. It may seem foolish to the world, but through the cross we can discover things that lead toward this true and deep happiness. That's what it means to be foolishly happy. To truly open ourselves to the love of God and to each other. I'm happy. Amen.